This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You already know your cell phone can send text messages and emails, take photos, and of course, even make the occasional phone call. Well, that same mobile phone outfitted with a small built-in computer chip can also pinpoint exactly where you are, and it can send that location to the nearest taxi, to a potential date in the bar next door, or to Starbucks, which then might email you with a coupon for a venti latte. The technology already exists. It combines wireless technology with GPS, the Global Positioning Satellite System. But until recently, most wireless companies shied away from it out of fears over privacy. Now, some are betting that customers will be more excited about the benefits than that they'll worry about who might know where they are. And with wireless phone carriers soon to be required by law to use technology like GPS to report your location when you dial 911, more and more phones will be equipped with this mapping technology. Later on in this hour, America's ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, announces his resignation and will take the temperature of Major League Baseball's Hot Stove League. But first, convenience versus privacy. Do you use your cell phone to track your location, to find nearby friends, to send yourself reminders when you get to the grocery store? Or if you haven't jumped on the location-based bandwagon, would you? Tell us why or why not. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. We begin with Randall Strauss. He writes the Digital Domain column for the New York Times, and he joins us now from a studio at Stanford University in Stanford, California. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
Give us an example of how this technology works and what it's capable of.
The availability of tracking has actually been around for quite a while, and as a society, we haven't objected to its use when the person being tracked is being tracked involuntarily. So we have examples of employers giving employees cell phones that have GPS tracking. We have parents giving children cell phones that can be tracked, and we haven't raised an eyebrow at such use.
And in fact, some of those ankle bracelets that they put on prisoners who are being held in home arrest and aren't allowed to leave their house, those use GPS technology too.
And we welcome that use of the technology. What is creating a little bit of a stir now is the announcement this past month of two major carriers offering a service that will allow us to voluntarily track one another. Their use is rather limited. In the case of the cell phone carrier Helio, you must have a certain kind of cell phone, and the people being tracked also have to have a similar phone. So to mutually track one another, you all have to have a brand new phone of a certain type and equipped with certain GPS capabilities.
And with a certain price tag, of course.
And a very high price tag. And the question is this leading us down a slippery slope where we willingly, voluntarily embrace a technology that will lead to a surveillance society?
And there are all kinds of questions about this. And there's another service, Verizon. We're seeing ads on this on TV already. You can put up a map on your cell phone. It'll show you exactly where you are.
Indeed, and that is a pretty innocuous service. I welcome that myself. One of the things that Google offers now is a map on many kinds of cell phones that will give you updated traffic information. It is not necessarily using GPS technology. It uses cruder technology, such as highway patrol traffic reports. Mm-hmm. So here's a question. Would we all be better off with really current, real-time traffic flow information? There are companies out there that are eager to work with the wireless carriers to capture that information based on the signals that our cell phones are constantly giving out. And would we be uncomfortable being tracked anonymously for the greater good of really accurate real-time traffic information.
And the benefits might include all kinds of things. Yes, you can keep track of your kids.
You could. As you mentioned at the beginning, you could also be offered advertising deals. One of the great quests from the great dot-com boom of 2000 was M-commerce, and there was great excitement at the time.
M for mobile.
M for mobile, correct. The idea would be, why inefficiently send advertising that you might not be ready for? That if the advertiser knew where you were and had an idea of what you might want to see, the advertising could be very targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a goal of advertisers for a number of years now, but they have to put us at ease.
Hmm. Is there any prospect of sort of, you know, integrating any number of these things? Now, we all know that some new cars have the ability to email us when various servicing things are required, or they. But could, you know, in the not too distant future, you get an email on your phone that says, your car tells us it needs an oil change. Stop by at Jiffy Lube 3 blocks ahead on your left.
The technology is there. The question is, would we be uncomfortable with that kind of message?
Let's find out. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Tina. Tina's calling us from Jacksonville, Florida.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that, you know, in working with people that are victims of domestic violence, I can see this being a major concern. And it even concerns me that they might give up having a cell phone altogether.
Randall Strauss, well, wouldn't this enable stalkers to know where the person of the object of their obsession is located?
This is precisely why Boost Mobile, which is one of the two companies that announced new services last month, has a long checklist of questions you should ask before you add a particular person to your list of people who will know where your location is. An example that Verizon Wireless offered to me when I spoke with them about why they did not yet offer this location tracking service was a similar sort of case. The spokesperson said, suppose your 16-year-old daughter, who might give her email address out to someone she shouldn't, the worst that can happen is she has to change her email address. But suppose she hands it out to someone, suppose she puts on her list of participating friends who can see her location, someone who is a stalker who would mean her ill.
Mm-hmm.
That's not so easily remedied.
And it might be somebody she included initially and then thought better of later.
Exactly. And that's why Verizon says we are going very slowly on this.
Hmm. Tina, good point. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to, this is John. John calling us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi.
Hi.
I work on a suicide crisis line, and we frequently get calls from cell phones from people, and they are in trouble, but they don't know where they are. It would be a wonderful thing for emergency services like 911, emergency rooms, or lines like ours to be able to say, hey, they're in this location.
Well, Randall Strauss, as I understand it, the law requires that all phones be able to report to 911 where the phone is.
That is the case. The Wireless Communication and Public Safety Act of 1999 mandated that the industry adopt cell phones that were capable of sending their location for 911 calls. Now, the caller's example raises a little question. If someone calls a suicide hotline but is not calling through 911, how would that call be treated? I'm curious. Is an equivalent to a 911 call?
What?
Would that be treated as equivalent to a 911 call?
Yes.
So
if they call in there, we assume that they may need help at some point. And we do everything within our power to get it. And they don't come through 911. They generally come on their own.
And would this, as I understand it, the technology, Randall Strauss, might have two different options, one of which would report the location automatically, and the other which might require you pushing a button or sequence of buttons to release the information.
That is true. Right now, you have to subscribe to these services. No one is being handed this cell phone tracking service, the newest services, and is being tracked continuously, other than the examples I gave involving employees and children. So you would have to have signed up so that you could press a button.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if someone is in an extremely distraught state of mind, whether they would be able to press the proper button to send the location so that help could be sent.
Or have to be talked into it by people like John in Grand Rapids. John, interesting point. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. If you have memory retention issues and a BlackBerry handheld device, you might want to consider a service offered by a little company in Cambridge, Massachusetts called Nagy LLC. Andrew Zimmer is the founder of Nagy. He joins us now from a studio at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge. And I'll let Andrew explain what is it that Nagy does?
Well, Nagy uses your location to help you remember to do things. It's essentially a to-do list which uses your location to trigger reminders. So one example is, you know, today I was supposed to pick up my dry cleaning, and I have dry cleaning on my to-do list, but, you know, I don't look at my to-do list enough, and I walk by the dry cleaners two or three times a day, and I don't look at my list, and I forget it. But with Nagy, as you're walking by or as you're driving by, you can set distance however you like. As you approach the relevant area, in this case the dry cleaners, your BlackBerry would vibrate or it'd pop up a little box that says, don't forget to pick up the dry cleaning.
And you came up with this because...
That sort of thing happened to me all the time. I would go to the grocery store and walk out and, you know, forget things, or I would walk, you know, my favorite example, it's a long way to Home Depot. And so I want to go to Home Depot, and I was sort of on the highway, sort of relatively close, and I'd keep going. I forget to stop all the time.
Mm-hmm. And presumably there's probably still some shirts lightly starched out there with your name on them somewhere.
Well, with Nagy, I hope they're all in my closet by now.
Okay. Stay with us. We'll take some more calls when we come back from a short break. We're talking about new technology that's available through your cell phone, which can track where you are, send that information to friends or maybe even to nearby stores, and technology that raises concerns over privacy. You can join our conversation if you'd like. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When the Defense Department opened its GPS satellite system to the public back in the 1980s, it spurred an industry of small devices that can pinpoint your location almost anywhere on the planet. The same technology that many people use in their cars is now built into many cell phones. Today we're talking about what you can do with this so-called social mapping technology and what privacy concerns these new services might raise. Our guests are Randall Straws, professor of business at San Jose State University, who writes the digital domain column for the New York Times. Also with us is Andrew Zimmer, the founder of a company called Nagy LLC. Of course, we want to hear from you. If you use your cell phone's built-in GPS to find a cab or groceries or nearby friends, give us a call. If you don't, do you like the sound of these services, or are you worried about some of the implications about privacy? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org. And Andrew Zimmer, Nagy, as I understand it, is only available to BlackBerry owners. How come?
Well, at the moment, that's true. Mostly it's because the GPS implementation is, I would use the word fragmented. By that, I mean different carriers and different devices all use different methods to expose the GPS information to a developer. So as a developer, I would have to write a slightly different program for one phone. And because there are so many different phones out there, I'd end up with, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 different versions of Nagy. And it becomes a fairly difficult problem to manage.
Hmm. Randall Straws, let me ask you, isn't that a problem for the FCC?
The FCC seems to be very uncomfortable with the whole mess of issues that have been posed by the advent of GPS technology. And one of the things the industry association has been pressing the FCC for is clear rules about keeping logs, protecting users' privacy, because the industry, surprisingly, is urging more regulation upon itself rather than less, because they understand that people are very nervous about privacy information, the retention of data about their whereabouts, and they want to be able to tell people the government has made it very clear that this data will never be misused.
Hmm. I wonder, Andrew Zimmer, as you listen to that, are you among those who want careful regulation of this?
Oh, definitely. I think having regulation and having standards not only protects the consumers, but it also means that for people who want to make software for GPS or any location-based service, it's that much easier for us to do. We know that we can write the application and it will work the same way on all handhelds. So I'm definitely all for it.
And on your system, would it be easy for hackers to access this information and download the laundry list?
It's extremely difficult. That's actually one of the reasons that we built the first version with BlackBerry, is because their security is very good. You have to go through a very long authentication process as a developer, and their security is so good, in fact, that a lot of government employees use BlackBerries.
I wonder, at this point, are you anticipating that your children will be heirs to the Nagy fortune?
I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but I'm keeping my day job at the same time.
And thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Good luck with it. Andrew Zimmer is the founder of Nagy LLC, and he joins us today from a studio at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Dave. Dave with us from Grand Junction, Colorado.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This technology has a lot of interesting applications to it, but just like in the dot-com boom, with all the talk about push technology on the Internet, they'd be able to push you all kinds of information. That didn't really take off until RSS became available recently in the past couple of years. Now I have subscriptions to all kinds of different blogs and publications and websites and company things. I think in the same way, I would like to be able to choose very carefully what I get, what information gets pushed to my cell phone, location-based.
And it's
a lot of appeal, but only if I have a lot of control over what is, who has the information and what's getting sent to me.
And that strikes me, Randall Straws, as somebody wanting opt-in as opposed to automatic access to everybody.
Right. And that is what the carriers are initially offering, is opt-in only. I wanted to add a comment about the problem of security and the risks of databases being hacked. I think the best way to reassure people that there is no danger of such a thing coming to pass is a very simple solution, which is not permitting the carriers to retain location data, that it should be treated as a very transient form of data, maybe just sitting on servers for just a few minutes, mm-hmm. and then being automatically purged. That's the best protection.
Yet, what if you found out that so-and-so had a cell phone with GPS and had a bomb or was a serial killer or something like that? You wanted to trace his motion over the past month.
Well, cell phone technology, by its nature, is always tracking us all the time. Our location is tied to a particular cell, and as we move, a call is passed from one cell to another. It's not as precise as a GPS device provides, but if law enforcement needs to retrospectively recreate a path of someone who is using a particular service, that can still be done.
Dave, thanks for the call.
Can I add one quick comment?
Sure.
I'd just like to add that not only should the information be very transient, but also I think it shouldn't be developed by each individual carrier. I think that a set standard should be developed that's open source and available, that everybody can have a good look at it and make sure that it's not hiding any proprietary gotchas in there, and then it'll be easier for developers to make use of and easier to regulate.
Dave, thanks very much. Appreciate it. As more, let's see if we get another caller in. This is Tim. Tim in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi.
Hi.
I use one of the, it's called a chaperone service from Verizon.
And that enables you to track somebody else's cell phone?
Just a particular individual. Actually, me and my wife both have it on each other's phone. And like when we go shopping, we'll turn it on. And if we're at the mall, then we can find each other. We don't use it for the intended purpose, but.
I was going to say, you and your wife use chaperone, eh?
Yeah, and then I'll leave it on, and she'll see that I'm, you know, down around the corner at the pub. She'll give me a call and ask me what's on tap.
So when you get lost in the mall, she can find you?
Yeah, that's right.
Or you get lost in the parking lot, she can find you.
It's really helpful this time of the year when, you know, there's tons and tons of people in the mall.
And any concerns about privacy on this?
You have to really jump through a bunch of hoops on the phone to even turn the service on so that it can find your location.
So not so easy, and not so easy for other people outside to use it either. So,
right.
Tim, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks.
And Randall Straws, that sounds like a Mark I version of this technology.
It does. It reminds me, though, that a geographer I spoke with at SUNY Buffalo used that very same example of spouses using this service and then finding that should they, for whatever reason, innocuous reason, want to go someplace without the other spouse knowing.
To buy them a secret present, for example.
That would be a very innocuous use, right. If they turn it off, will that act, if they go off the map, will that arouse concern and suspicion that using this service may create an expectation of constant availability? And is that something we want to build into our lives?
As more cell phone companies offer GPS tracking technology, it also raises questions about who knows where you are, when, and who can access that information. Peter Swire was chief counselor for privacy in the Clinton administration. He's currently a law professor at The Ohio State University in Columbus, and he joins us now by phone from his office there. Good to talk to you, Peter.
Hello, Neil.
You have concerns about this technology?
Well, you have to build it right. And you sure don't want to have people being surprised by being tracked when they had no idea they were being tracked.
Mm-hmm. And that would be the technology to make sure you are opting into stuff as opposed to just being tracked all the time.
Right. And I'm not sure this is true, but I think I've heard that in some systems GPS defaults on. And I think that's a bad idea.
And the fact remains, though, that mobile telephones themselves are part of their function is to be a tracking device.
Well, it's a tracking device, so the phone company can do a very good thing, which is put you in the right cell and find your phone so they can send you a call. And that's what customers want. But I don't think most customers realize by getting a cell phone that they've changed their life, so they're carrying a tracking device that's beeping somehow into a database wherever they go in life. And as a society, I think like your show today is helping people think through, gee, having that kind of location database on everywhere I've ever been, that's quite a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Does the law say anything about this?
It says a little tiny bit about it. It says that the companies can't sell this information under some FCC rules, at least unless they've given you an opt-out choice. But those rules were written before location information was really something the law was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the law, Randall Straws, what do you understand what it says?
Well, the law does require carriers to build in the technology that gives them the ability to find you for if you place a 911 call, but it does say you have to explicitly give your permission for that location information to be used for any other purpose.
And is there a gray area on what permission consists of?
Apparently so, and that's why the industry trade group a few years ago tried to get the FCC to make clear those rules about what exactly constitutes consent. Mm-hmm. Is there such a thing as implied consent? If you buy a GPS-equipped phone, are you implicitly saying you consent to the use of that location information?
If you have one of these phones and you buy a grande latte, are you consenting for Starbucks to send you information?
That could be an example of a very broad definition of implied consent.
And Peter Swire, these issues, they get hammered out. These are not easily done. These things get hammered out usually over time in the courts, don't they?
Well, the courts might do it. I think that you could have the FCC do rules. You can have Congress write laws. And then I think Congress is especially going to have to think about the laws when it comes to government getting access to these databases.
Hmm. Let's see if we get another caller on the line, and this is Rary calling us from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello, Rary? I guess Rary has left us. Never mind. Anyway, let's go to Mark, and Mark's with us from Oakland, California.
Hi. A couple of your speakers have addressed, you know, there are different kinds of ways that your phone can know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much all of the different ways that the carriers are enabling require the carrier's network to be able to track you down, like whether it's through the cell tower or maybe there's a GPS chip in the phone, but the cell tower is helping the phone out in terms of figuring out where it is. What if the phone, like I have a TomTom on my phone, for example, which is a way in which you can get directions and use it as a car navigation device.
Right.
Well, what if only the phone itself knows what your location is? Doesn't that mean that you have a lot more control over giving out that location to other services? If it's the phone and not the phone network that's tracking you?
Randall Strauss, is that a difference without a distinction?
Well, that's why one can use something like Google Maps for mobile phones right now without being concerned that the information is being shared with others. So you can, as you suggest, application by application, choose those kinds of uses that do not involve sharing your location information. But ultimately, it's the nature of the cellular technology that the carrier does have to know where your phone is at all times. And that does always keep, at least in the far recesses of our minds, the concern that, for example, government may use that information in ways that would make us uncomfortable.
Mark, thanks for the call. We're talking about the uses of GPS tracking technology in cell phones. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me ask you about that point that Randall Strauss just raised, Peter Swire. I mean, this is uses of this technology by government. You can get annoyed by coupons from Starbucks. Government is where you start getting into real concerns.
Well, I just it's a revolutionary thing for people to carry tracking devices. So most of us didn't carry a cell phone 10 years ago. Most of us have one today. And cell phones have this tracking built in. And so it's not as though we have centuries of experience as a society thinking about, oh, the government should be able to use this tracking device or not use this tracking device. And so sometimes you see government people saying, well, there's no laws against it, so we should be able to go ahead and get this data. But I think that's not a very good argument because we've never had the discussion about whether government should get a moment-by-moment readout on where citizens are.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email we got from Douglas in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm a technology junkie, but the last thing I need is a way for advertisers to further intimidate me. Who in their right mind would want more dreck in their lives? I would pay for a service that guarantees I will not be bothered based on my location. And I guess Randall Strauss, that's the reverse application for entrepreneurs.
Right. You know, in 1988, Congress passed the Video Privacy Protection Act that kept our video rental records secret and private. Perhaps we should consider a Cell Phone Privacy Protection Act that would make clear that we want our location information kept private.
Mm-hmm. As this technology expands, and Peter Swire, as we mentioned, the 911 law requires that cell phones be able to do this, so the technology is going to be there. What do you think we ought to be able to do now, in the process of agreeing on rules? Is it the FCC? Is it Congress? Where should the debate be?
Well, I think the debate, I hope, starts with some things that have already been said. One of them is this idea of don't automatically retain location data. If you don't have a database, then there's not going to be this huge temptation for everybody to mine in it. And sometimes with a database, if you build it, they will come. Once you have the databases built into the technology, users after users start to find out about it and try to find it, and they can justify, gee, it would be so great if we knew where Peter had been every minute.
Right.
So I think that not assuming databases and having very clear permissions for the people who want to play, but then not expecting other people to be tracked. Those are a couple of the things to have as principles to start with.
Peter Swire, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Peter Swire was the chief counselor for privacy in the Clinton administration, currently professor of law at The Ohio State University's Law School. Joined us today by phone from his office in Columbus, Ohio. We just have a few seconds left, Randall Strauss, but where does this debate go next in terms of what you know?
I think we'll be debating these issues, but I don't think we will be slowing, ultimately, the widespread adoption of this technology. Past experience suggests that once we invent a technology, we use it.
Randall Strauss is professor of business at San Jose State University, the author of the Digital Domain column in the New York Times. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Randall Strauss joined us today from a studio at Stanford University in Stanford, California. When we come back from a short break, today's resignation of the United States Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. Plus, we'll gather around Major League Baseball's hot stove and get a mid-December warm-up. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.